Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name is Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Colin Jones, who is either a defensive back for the Carolina Panthers or he's a blackjack expert who has a blackjack school called blackjackapprenticeship.com. We're going to be talking to Colin shortly. Richard, there's been a rash of break-ins, burglaries, in the recent past in Las Vegas. So other than normal things such as locking your door, putting your money in a safe, don't advertise yourself if you have money on you. Is this something players should be worried about?
Well, I was a little concerned when I saw the article. The thing that was really disturbing to me was that people are getting burgled where the burglars have a key to your room. And so it looks like, you know, there's some inside help going on with this kind of burglaries. And in the case of a burglary at the Golden Nugget, it just coincidentally happened to be a room that had a broken, you know, what do they call that lock? That thing you swing across the door that catches, you know, that happened to be broken on that room. So, you know, the person couldn't
protect
themselves.
That's a good reason to ask for another room.
The what?
That's a good reason to ask for another room.
Actually, it is. You know, but probably something I would not have considered until after reading that article today.
Interesting. I've actually never had a problem with that. It was discussed on VP Free, among other places, and some people had good suggestions, such as if you have money on you, be low profile. You shouldn't go around advertising that you just hit a jackpot for $25,000 and you're in room 1023. It's probably not a smart move.
You know, that's actually a really important point. If I'm playing in a place where my action is much larger than the average person, and when that happens, you often get a lot of attention at the table. People say, oh, this guy's betting a lot of money. If I'm ever in a situation like that, I am extra careful leaving the casino. I usually walk around in circles a bit in the casino, going up and down slot machine rows just to make sure there's nobody following me.
But you never know who, because with cell phones, they could be called. Well, the guy in the green shirt has money, so you watch the north door and I'll watch the south. And so you can go through all those maneuverings that you want. And anyway, let's go on to a happier thought. On your website, Munch, you've been becoming a cartoonist. You have been creating cartoons on gambling subjects. Is this something that you're planning to do on a regular basis?
Yeah, you know, I discovered the site, a site called Go Animate, that's free. And, you know, I just was having fun with it. So I've done four of them now, and each one gets a little bit more complex, a little bit longer, a little more involved. I'm having a good time. You know, as long as I don't run out of ideas, I will keep doing it. Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I did notice your skit on the world's greatest blackjack player. He had no legs and no neck. Those should be minor minor flaws in the world's greatest blackjack player, and that actually wasn't what the joke was all about. But was that creative license that you thought that would be pretty cool not to have legs and a neck, or is it just you hadn't figured out how to work the software yet?
Well, no, they create these characters, and there's a library of hundreds of characters, and that particular group of characters that I drew for that particular cartoon, it's a floating head on a body and feet on the bottom. That's just the way the characters look. So yeah, I could have chosen like my latest one. The characters were actually taken from a library of Election 2012. So you know, the label on one of the characters was actually Mitt Romney, although you would never know that looking at it. But they're a more, you know, a different style. And they have many different styles of characters to choose from. So,
well, of the two characters, I could tell which one would be Mitt Romney because the other one was bald.
And right.
All right. So let's continue on your website. And this is a subject about which our guest Colin may want to jump in. You've recently had two separate articles about playing in disguise. I know Colin's team has some experience with disguises, but there's something on your website that maybe even Colin did not know. You have the suggestion that if you have a chance to spit tobacco at a pit boss, it's probably a good thing. Would you want to tell us about this?
Well, you know, I always called them characters, just I guess because of my acting background. But so yeah, I had created a character that I called the Mover from Vancouver, and you know, I had put on a pair of greasy coveralls like a mechanic would wear, and put engine grease, you know, rubbed it into my hands, and had a Red Man hat, and was chewing on a cigar. And so I was sitting on first base, and I would, you know, when you chew on a cigar, little pieces of tobacco get in your mouth. And so I would just turn my head to the right and spit into the pit, you know. And I found that this kept bosses away from me, you know, because every time they would come near, I would start spitting the tobacco in toward the pit, and that would keep them away. So that turned out to be a good thing. But the character itself did not go over very well. I think they thought I looked too much like a bum to, you know, be betting $500 a hand. So,
huh. Okay, good. Now, what other do's and don'ts did you have about disguises?
Well, actually, I think Colin could greatly add to this, but my experience is that disguises actually just turn out to be more hassle than they're worth. They take so much time to put on, and they're so easy to, especially if you're dealing with makeup, you know, it runs, it gets on your hand, it gets on your chips, it starts to smear, you don't want to scratch your nose. And everybody I know that's attempted this has ended up giving it up as just too much of a hassle. So actually, once we bring Colin on, maybe we could talk some more about what kind of things do work well.
Well, Colin, speak up. In your movie, on the Holy Roller movie, well, it's not your movie, it's a movie about you. your partner in crime, Ben, once went to an opening, I guess you could say, in goth.
Yeah.
He got kicked out anyway. So were you ever able to use
He didn't get kicked out. Actually. They had no, I dressed up as a mechanic and he dressed up in goth. It was the grand opening of a casino, and both of us were betting multiple at one point. I asked all the players if I could play every spot of $500, and the thing that was funny was the pit bosses, we recognized them from other casinos. They'd left other casinos that we used to play to move to this new big one, and so we could recognize them, but they didn't recognize us. I think if we would have stuck around for more than a couple hours, then we would have been outed, but the goth thing actually worked.
And when you say you were dressed as a mechanic, was it a similar kind of thing where you were looking like an auto mechanic or...
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of see in the movie, but My hair was longer. I pulled it back into a little tiny ponytail and did the same thing. Put grease, a little grease on my face, grease on the hands, and I got a mechanic's like coveralls and wore boots. And you know, I had that same eerie feeling of what mechanic is busting out thousands of dollars at a time. But for a short session on the opening night of a casino, it seemed to work.
Now, what was your experience like? Did you guys use disguises in other situations, and what was your experience like with that?
Yeah, it wasn't a really regular thing that we did. It shows it a bit in the documentary, but that was more so we would retest our entire team every 3 or 6 months, and so we would take them to a casino in the Seattle area and let them play, and then we would watch them. But the problem is Ben and I weren't allowed in most of those casinos. So, you know, one of the ones we would go to, I was trespassed at. And so we would have to put on something where we really didn't look like ourselves. We might not even be playing. So the first time we did this, and we also did it for fun, kind of our goal was that a player on our team could walk by us and not recognize us. We just thought that would be hilarious. And you know, we just tried to have fun with it. Because, you know, that was one of the kind of things about our team was I don't know, just having the most fun we could with things like that, even though we took our blackjack play very seriously. But the first time we went, we had joked for a long time, Ben and I, about dressing as a cowboy and an Indian, but Ben would be an East Indian because depending on how he looks, you can't really tell what ethnicity Ben is. He's half American and half Korean, and he can look, you know, very Asian, or he can look Middle Eastern. So he wore a full turban, and he grew his beard out for a couple months before this, and he bought a suit. And he was betting multiple spots of $500, and he brought no ID. And when they asked his name, he wrote all consonants on a piece of paper, and they gave him a player's card. His player's card said Sarva Farvav, and that was his. He got a player's card with it with no ID. And they didn't suspect a thing. And I dressed as a cowboy. And I was nervous. I did the same thing. I actually had gum, but I put it kind of under my lip like I had chew. And I would spit into a cup. And someone came up, tapped on my shoulder, and I was like, oh, great, they know who I am. But they were just telling me I couldn't chew at the table.
But you know, still spent.
I had an experience when one of the first teams I played for, we had the same kind of thing where we would be checked out in the casino. And so I went, I was going to be checked out before I joined this team. And I went down to the Golden Gate on Fremont Street. And I went in first and I bought in for 500 and I was there betting quarters. And my teammate comes in with a drink in his hand, kind of acting a little bit drunk. And he comes up to my table with, now they had $1 tables at that time. And this was a $1 table. He comes up with three crumpled $1 bills and puts them down, and the dealer is changing his $3 buy-in, and the boss comes running down the pit and says, he gets no action, and points to my teammate that wanted to buy in for $3. Mm. So we had that kind of problem where people were too well recognized to do the checkouts. We ended up going down to a place called the Orbit Inn down the street, which later became the Western. But
After a couple of those where we would have players do our full team bet spread, we were just getting too much action. So then we had players use a $5 unit so we could still see how they played, because it was more to just see the playing decisions and see how, if they're looking for other tables to move to, if the count goes bad, stuff like that. And I think my favorite was Ben dressed up. He wore an MIT shirt. He ordered it online, got glasses, and hiked his slacks up above his navel and tried to look like an MIT math nerd. And he was betting $500 and they didn't do anything.
That's a good disguise.
Well, that was the whole thing. You know, I mean, if you know Ben at all, it's like, how can I push things to the limit and see what happens? But somehow it was so ridiculous. They let it slide. I mean, just for the 4 hours we were testing players.
Wow. Well, since we've been talking to Colin Jones, we might as well properly introduce him. This is Colin's second visit to the show. He was one of the leaders on what they called the Church Team, also known as the Holy Rollers. A documentary movie was made about the team, which I guess would rather effectively eliminate any question about who he was and what he looked like, as long as it wasn't as a mechanic. Today, he runs a blackjack school, and a website is blackjackapprenticeship.com. Colin Jones, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks, Ben.
What?
I just wanted to go back to the disguise thing. One of the stories I told in the blog post was, you know, I was working in Hollywood, so we had I had a friend who was a special effects makeup artist. So we hired her to come over and make over members of the team. And one of them, she actually got quite extensive, and she taped his eyes back using a piece of elastic that went behind his head so it would pull his eyes back to make him look Asian, and then used this skin tint to darken his skin, and then had a black wig. And he just felt he looked ridiculous. And we were playing in Korea. And so he – and she also cut these little pieces of tubing that he would insert in his nose, and it would make his nostrils enlarged so it would make his nose look better, bigger, but he could still breathe through it because it was plastic tube. And so he took all this stuff with him to Korea, put it all on in the hotel room, thought, you know, this is going to last 5 minutes. And he goes down, walks in, and the first thing a guy says to him is, "What part of India are you from?" And and it worked really well. But, you know, eventually he just abandoned it because it was so much of a hassle to put it on and take it off and all the worries, you know.
Putting on yourself can be a problem. Like when I get a haircut and when I leave the barber shop, my hair looks pretty good. But when I'm trying to do that same thing the next day after a shower, it doesn't look like it did when I left the barber. So putting on your own, having an expert do it is one thing, but putting it on yourself is something quite a bit different.
Yeah. Well, she did teach him how to do it. But we had another member of the team who, you know, it helped tremendously to look Asian and when you're playing in Asia. And another member of the team was a weightlifter and, you know, quite a large, bulky guy. And she made him look Asian. And people thought he was from Samoa. You know, it really worked well.
That's amazing.
Bet they kicked him out gently.
Yeah, eventually. I mean, you know, doesn't matter what you look like. Eventually, they're going to, if you win too much money, they're going to throw you out.
All right.
Did you guys deal with makeup at all, Colin?
No, we were not, we never got that serious about it. We would, you know, change clothes or show up with a beard and then, you know, midway into the trip, shave the beard, cut the hair and wear completely different clothes. I think my favorite was a guy, I don't even know where he lives now. He was a really interesting character that we met in the Seattle area. He and his girlfriend started with like $500 and turned it into over $1 million, just the two of them. But he had long hair and would wear army fatigues and had a big beard. And he played that way, going by one name, and got backed off everywhere in the Northwest and I think in Vegas. And then they went to Europe for maybe 6 months. He came back and cut his hair, got a really nice-looking leather jacket, shaved his beard off, and went by a different name, and went to all the same places he'd been backed off before with an entire new identity. And it worked really well. It was pretty impressive. And that was no makeup. It was just really changing his look.
Well, those are the things that I think really work well. And I think it works better to take things away, like cutting your hair and shaving the beard, than when you try to add it. You could also do it overnight, basically, as well. But, I think those things can be really effective. You know, hair, facial hair, glasses, and hats, you know, are kind of the main tools.
I've heard hat and jacket, hat and your coat can be, you know, the two quickest ways to change your look, because those are the things that are the most obvious for surveillance and even for pit bosses.
Right, right. You know, and I think the other thing that people don't think about enough is their posture and their mannerisms. You know, a lot of times people have really recognizable mannerisms that they don't think about, or they sit in a particular way. And so when you try to change your look by whatever, shaving the beard and all that, it's really important, I think, to think about, you know, changing all of it, changing the way you sit and the way you walk. And definitely your clothes, you know.
If you have distinctive hand jewelry, that can be key as well. If you have a ring that is unusual and you don't change it, that can be a giveaway.
Ring, watch. And that's why, you know, guys with tattoos, you know, my son, you know, was talking about wanting to get a tattoo, and he smartly realized, oh, you know, you don't want anything that anybody can see that's going to be distinguishable.
Yeah.
So, Colin, you have a school about blackjack. What kind of things does your school teach?
Yeah, I guess I haven't called it a blackjack school, but blackjack apprenticeship started from, you know, we're training a lot of players for our team, and it was a sort of thing where we had this introductory training that would explain how EV works and how blackjack, or how card counting, is more like investing than gambling, and why we believe that, and just some more fundamental pieces. And at one point, we decided, let's just videotape this, because there are people that were interested that we might say, well, you can learn basic strategy, come back if you actually learn it. We thought, well, you can just watch this. And then we thought, this is actually pretty good. I don't think we did research online. There wasn't anything out there like it. So we created a website and, you know, filled out the video training, made it really comprehensive. And that was our website. And people could, you know, watch some of the videos for free, pay for the rest. And since then, it's really turned into, we still have the video course, which is really good. And we've added a lot of videos to it. But we also have a forum where players can get questions answered and network. And we do boot camps. We have a boot camp coming up in a couple of weeks in Vegas where we do hands-on training. And we have a really high response. People are always really pleased with it. But we're now working more on software that will help both card counters in training and active card counters to be casinos. So we're really trying to build it out to have all the resources that we wish we would have had while running the team, and, you know, share our expertise with kind of the next generation of advantage players.
So now you created this app that's for card counters, and Bob, did you have an iPhone? Did you check out the app?
Well, I've had an iPhone for a year and a half now. I have yet to download any apps. I am a certain level of technologically challenged.
Why bother with an iPhone? Why not get one of the old flip phones, you know? Or do you use your phone to...
I actually do email on my iPhone and do know how to take pictures, do know how to send them.
Oh, very good.
So I am... I'm beyond kindergarten, but not quite to third grade.
My wife has an iPad, so I did download the app, and I checked it out. And, it was pretty cool. I mean, it teaches you basic strategy, and there's a trainer where you can count cards, and it'll test you to see if you're keeping the count right. Doesn't do anything for the betting. It doesn't, you know, because I tried, like, waiting for the count to go negative and then jumping my bet way up to see if it would say anything about that. But,
So it has deviations and true counts, but it doesn't have a betting, you know, you can set this bet spread, because it really depends on the player. But we are working on, there's a handful of drills that the developer's working on right now that will help with some of that stuff. So, yeah, it was kind of once Apple opened up third-party developers, we just thought it would be really cool to create something. Because I remember when I was training and it was flipping cards over on the dining room table, or they just come out with online casinos and we could download free casino software and play, but it would never tell you if you made a basic strategy mistake or a deviation mistake. You could never check your count. So we wanted to create something that could really help card counters in that way.
Yeah, and that part, yeah, that part I thought worked really well. I mean, it, you know, it'll go all the way through the shoe, and you can check the count as you go if you want, or it'll wait till the end. But and then you have these other things on the site itself, as opposed to on the app, where it has like basic strategy drills and that kind of stuff, yeah. Right?
Yeah, and really the goal is to, you know, have as much training on both platforms, but you know, they're in different programming languages, and you know, the iPhone, we partnered with a developer that was a really good friend of ours, and he said, I want to create an iPhone app. And he said, I don't have an idea. And we said, well, we want to create a card counting training app, but we don't know how to program. So we partnered with him, but you know, he's making those updates, and then we're working with other developers for everything on the site. So they're going at kind of different rates, but things are moving. You know, we're adding features to both all the time.
When you were on the show last October, you and Ben came on, and at that time it seemed like Ben was taking a vacation from Blackjack World, but then on your current website, and it seems like he's a part of it. So has he rejoined the group, or is it just that picture on the website needs to be updated?
No. He's never left the site. He's still a part of it. His energy comes and goes for actually being involved in Blackjack, and he was definitely at a low around that point. He'd have to speak for himself. I know he's actually even played since then, but it's not, you know, it's not the most important part of his life. I wouldn't say it's the most important part of mine, but we both are active in, you know, growing the resources of the site. He's less active in kind of the day-to-day stuff. That's something that is still fun and exciting for me. He's more interested in kind of the long-term big picture stuff.
But both of you still play occasionally, right?
Occasionally, not very often, but I know we both have played in the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 months.
But that documentary must have effectively eliminated any chance you have of being nondescript in a casino. So they must see you,
you know,
from the parking lot.
I don't, you know, I mean, Max Rubin has been on every television show in the world, yet he can still go play. So
yeah.
I don't think, you know, I mean, do you think the documentary really hurt you as far as your ability to play, Colin?
No, I mean, I can play. I've never been unable to play, even in Vegas, the smartest place in the world. I've never been unable, you know. I don't bet in the, you know, I don't bet two spots of $2,000 or $3,000 if I'm going to play at this point. And I definitely don't play rated. But the last few times that I played in Vegas, and I mean played, you know, 10, 20 hours in a couple of days, I did not. I'm trying to even remember if I had more than one back off during those trips just by playing unrated and not, you know, betting insane amounts.
Right. And moving around fairly
yeah,
often,
exactly,
I would think.
Exactly. Yes.
You, Richard has said a couple times on this program that he doesn't think there are many guys out there making a living strictly counting cards. Does your experience say that's true, or do you disagree?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was interesting when we interviewed Tommy Hyland a couple months ago, and, you know, what he said without going into too much detail makes me think that there are people that for decades have made money doing primarily card counting. And I know people that still are. I think that it is wise and even we did this, but to look for every opportunity you have. So I think that a lot of the full-time people, you know, they've researched ways so they're not a one-trick pony. I think that's a very wise way of doing it. But I can attest, you know, our team disbanded only a year and a half ago. And we had guys that had been playing for half a decade full time, just card counting. So it's hard for me to imagine that in the last year and a half, it's all of a sudden become unplayable full time.
Do you move around a lot? Do any of your guys?
So your guys don't do anything other than count. They don't play any other kind of advantage play opportunities.
Our team didn't. Our team was just. I mean, we did before the church team. So we had a earlier team that was Ben and I and a couple other guys, and we did a little bit of hole carding. And of course, if there was, you know, some sort of promotion or, you know, valuable, you know, like obvious stuff, we would play it. But we didn't do much. The church team itself didn't do anything but card counting. And we had guys, one of the guys who writes for our site under the name Loudon Austin, and he played thousands and thousands of hours, and he just wasn't afraid of back offs, and he just worked hard. And, you know, if I had to do over, I would have, with a guy like him, spent more time looking for ways for him to, you know, develop other skills. But we had a handful of guys that just counted cards for thousands of hours for profit.
Yeah. You have this new thing on your site that is – how do I describe it? I guess it's kind of an online version of current blackjack news sort of thing, where you're trying to gather data about all the blackjack games and all the casinos. What is that called, and how is that going?
Yeah, it's called Casino 411. It's going well, and we're actually really excited about it. I describe it as a Yelp for card counters. So,
What was the word you use?
Yelp.
People that are familiar with Yelp. So if you're looking for a restaurant, if you're in an area you're not familiar with and you're saying, let's get some food, you can, you know, just use Yelp and either on your smartphone or on your computer and find out. There's ratings, there's the basic information, like the hours of the restaurant and if it's kid-friendly, all stuff like that. But then it also has reviews. So Casino 411 is similar to that, where it's very crowdsourced, where it's the community that's adding the information, and we have people that moderate it to make sure that it's, you know, good information. It's only paying members, and we keep an eye that it's not infiltrated and misinformation added. But the whole idea is you have your basic information, which is the casino, the address, the phone number, the number of tables, the rules, the number of decks, the penetration, all this stuff that's just very, you know, very objective, so that if someone is flying into Vegas, and this is what we would have for our team, where it's like, hey, do a trip to Vegas early on in the team, and we didn't know where to play. So we'd say, oh, well, there are these places and they have better rules. And then someone would go play it and get backed off in 5 minutes. And it was like, oh, well, it looked good. So that's where the second part of the software, which is the reviews, comes into play, so that people can leave reviews and say, this casino is really great, unrated, or this casino is great for comps, you know, but don't do large bet spreads at it, or you're going to get backed off, or this is a great low limit place, or this is a great high limit place, or this place used to be good, but now it's sweaty, all sorts of stuff, because casino information is changing, not just the objective data of the number of decks and the, you know, house edge, but the things that fluctuate, like the heat levels of a casino, different people's experiences. So we developed that because our team, we had an internal website, and we shared information about every casino and every player's experience. And the people that joined the team 3 years into it had such an advantage over the people joined it at the beginning, that people at the beginning would just go play somewhere and they might get backed off, or, you know, they might get flyered. And then the next people, they say, oh, actually, you don't want to play rated at this place. It's going to ruin your entire trip. So we want to create something that added that value to card counters.
No, it would be a tremendous resource, but you're kind of at odds with yourself by, if it's a if it's a paid site where that keeps the number of members low, you don't get the value of the crowdsourcing because there are very few people who can then contribute to it.
Well, the two reasons why we believe it will work or is one is that we actually have a pretty large number of paying members. We have several hundred, over 300 paying. I haven't looked recently, but the site's still growing, and we have well over 300 paying members is the one reason. And then the second reason is that we have area, like regional specialists that we're working with that are, you know, we're helping them out with information or with things that we can add value to them in exchange for them, you know, being really an expert in a region to make sure that information is built out and accurate.
You know, I'll tell you another thing that I think would really, I was just talking about this with somebody recently. Boy, if you would include all the games, you know, while they're there, just go around and say, oh, they have, you know, this many craps tables, this many roulette wheels, this many of this carnival game, that carnival game, that carnival game. I mean, that'd be a tremendous resource to know what games each casino actually has.
Yeah, especially if you say it, and Janice on the swing shift flashes her whole card. That would be great information.
Obviously, you don't want to give dealers' names.
I'll give two responses. One is, Richard, that's a really good idea. I wish I could say we had thought of that before right now, but that's actually a really good idea. The second thing is that we are hoping once we feel comfortable with the beta forms of these software, because we rolled out three things a couple months ago. One is this Casino 411, two is the drills on the website, and three is a whole new form software that's more interactive. So there's kind of a lot that we've been working on, as well as the iPhone apps, and now we're working on Android, stuff like that. But the other thing that we're hoping to roll out once we feel comfortable with those is what we're calling a purple chip forum that would be very, very invite only. We have a small list. And because there's stuff like that I don't think Richard wants someone saying this dealer is flashing, you know,
I'm
a whole
sure
card
he
at
doesn't.
This game on this shift.
Yeah, I'm sure he doesn't, but he would appreciate a private email to that effect.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the whole idea of the purple chip forum would be a very, very invite only place for some of that stuff. We wouldn't make money off that. That would just be, you know, why not? We've got the software.
Right, right.
You were in the news a few weeks ago about you're developing a Google Glass application. So I didn't really know what Google Glass was, and now I know it's something to do with eyeglasses. But what more can you tell us, and how will that application be different than the other apps you have?
Yeah, well, the first thing is we're researching developing it. Google Glass is really, really in its infant stages. There's only, you know, I think 100 pair, or maybe it's 1,000, but it's not a consumer product yet, and they're insanely expensive to buy right now. So it's sort of like, hey, we're working on this technology, and we're going to let some people have it and some developers mess around with it. But we have a developer, and he's a very, very bright guy, and we've been talking with him about
that. I just want to break in here and for our audience. First of all, this is basically a pair of glasses that has a computer in the glasses, and the casinos are already terrified of this device.
Yes.
And have said that you will not be allowed to wear this device in the casino. So
yes.
It is a computer that you can, I understand, operate in some cases with your eye movements. I'm sorry. So
there
go
aren't
ahead.
Any applications. Oops, I'm sorry. Yeah, thanks for clarifying. There aren't any applications yet with eye movement, but, you know, it's just a matter of time. Because there's some really interesting iPhone apps now that can use the camera in it to kind of read things. There's some games that you can use. It's really an interesting technology. But we saw it, and we thought there were some opportunities. And, of course, everybody's thinking someone's going to be sitting at the table wearing these goofy-looking Google glasses, and it's going to be counting cards for them. But that's not the application that we're imagining. But I think that the things that we've talked about that we're really excited about, one is for just training drills and using it as a way that people can if Google Glass is a mass accepted piece of technology like iPhones, where, you know, a large, or smartphones, I should say, where basically everybody has a smartphone, is how can we incorporate training drills into it? And we have some ideas that we're working on. The other is Casino 411. So Google Glass has a GPS feature. So you could be the application, if we can incorporate Casino 411 with the Google Glass, is that someone could be walking down the Vegas Strip, and rather than having to pull out, you know, have printed out sheets of paper with the casinos, the rules, the conditions, all that stuff, that they would be able to read in real time, okay, Bellagio has these games, you know, does that fit my bankroll and what I'm looking for, and real-time updates of, oh, actually, don't play Bellagio right now. It's completely packed because of, you know, whatever, oh, just got out or something like that. But someone could walk down the strip and have access to the playing conditions rather than having to, you know, pull out a laptop or have printed out sheets of paper to approach, you know, to really go after the games in a city. Where there's also an opportunity that we're working on for training players. There have been a lot of people that have asked if we can do, like, Skype training, where we would train them over the computer, but that's a logistical nightmare. But with Google Glass, it records what they're looking at. And so we could have someone, a trainee, where we ship the Google Glass to them, or they have their own, I don't care. But it can record their playing, someone dealing to them, and we can assess the decisions they're making, their count, everything like that. Be able to see it in real time or review it later and give them instruction. So we're just looking at the applications, and we feel excited that it wouldn't just be creating something just because it's something that would actually be valuable to people if this technology becomes accepted by, you know, the masses.
You have something called a boot camp. What I'm worried about is how many push-ups do you have to do if you can't count down a deck in 15 seconds?
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends how hardcore you want to be about the training. So far, I don't think I've seen any push-ups at one of our boot camps. But the boot camps
And
what's that?
No, I was just going to say, like, how long is it? Is it one day? Is it two? What does it cost? Yeah. What do people learn?
Yeah, it's a one-day, all-day event, and it costs $1,500. There's a discount for people that are members of our site. But it's, you know, we've had players from just learning basic strategy all the way to we've had people with $1 million bankroll before.
Wow.
People playing professionally. My preference is people that have basically plateaued. So a lot of people think, well, why would I do this when I could just buy a book and teach myself? But I think, Richard, you could attest that it's not quite that easy. Most of the people that I know that have played professionally were trained by someone else that played professionally. And it's exciting for me, or exciting for us, to take someone that they've spent a lot of time practicing on their own, and they've gotten their skills to maybe an 8 out of 10 or even a 9 out of 10, but they're unaware, they have blind spots in their game, whether it's not being aware of dealer mispays, whether it's poor deck estimation or true count conversion. And so we deal to players. There's also, we do lectures, and you know, some of the lectures are a lot more about the philosophy behind EV. So the players that learn how to think about the game of blackjack rather than just, oh, basic strategy, high, low, plus one, minus one. But people that know how to think that way can gain the edge, or really be aware of when they do and don't have the edge. So we do a series of lectures. We do a series of dealing to players and point out their flaws. And then we do Q&A. We talk about running a team. We talk about team play. We talk about signals. We talk about traveling with $100,000 through an airport, everything people would want to know. And, you know, to be honest, when we first started doing it, I didn't know if it was going to be something people would be really pleased with for that amount of money or not. But the response has been really positive. We've had people that have done, you know, other trainings, and they said that it was really high quality. So We love doing it, and people so far are really happy with our training.
So it's
I think the problem with people, when you learn from a book, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And there's no way to learn it unless you're with professionals or really experienced people. And the other benefit, I mean, I've heard the same thing about Mike Aponte's classes. And Nathaniel Tilton wrote, a really good book, The Blackjack Life, about it. Not only do you learn those things you're talking about that aren't in the books, but it's also an opportunity to meet other players, to network and meet other players, where in Nathaniel Tilton's case, he met the guy who ended up becoming his, his partner that they've now played together for years.
Yeah. Yeah. There are three active teams that I know of that those players have been through our boot camps, three separate teams. So I'm not saying come to a boot camp and you're going to start a team, but there is a level of, people that are taking it really seriously and want to network and want to meet people. But I think the most valuable thing is what you had said, which is you don't know what you don't know. And that was my experience. Ben was on the Greeks briefly, and that changed his game from being mediocre to being very, very professional. And I trained myself, and I thought I was pretty good. And I convinced Ben and I were playing together. We had joined our money. This is really stupid that he didn't test me out before throwing in his $7,000 with me, but he just thought I was, a very math-headed guy. And so I bugged him, and he eventually dealt to me and destroyed me. And I mean, I had worked really hard at it, but he was adding up my hand wrong, and I was just trusting him with it. And he was taking my money when we'd pushed, and, he was completely throwing me off. And basically, I was so humiliated, I went back and practiced my ass off and took my game from being, probably break even to being a successful player. And I didn't know what I didn't know. And I think there are a lot of players out there like that.
Excellent. Thank you, Colin. We appreciate having this interview with you. Now, blackjackapprenticeship.com is your website. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, is that the best way to do it?
Yeah. Yeah, they can email me, colin@blackjackapprenticeship.com. Absolutely.
Very good. Thank you very much. If you can, we're going to do some commercials now. If you can hang on, we probably will have time for another question or two at the end. That was was very interesting. And Richard, did you learn anything tonight?
Oh, well, well, we're kind of in the same business. So, that Casino 411, actually, I learned more about that Casino 411. And I think, that has been tried in the past. It's a big undertaking. But if somebody ever solves that, if he cracks that nut, I mean, boy, what an invaluable resource that would be. I mean, really, really a valuable thing if he can do it. And I'm sure right now it's already valuable for certain parts of the country. But to try to cover the whole U.S., you need a lot of people. So, but actually, I haven't been on to check it out, so I need to do that.
All right, and what I learned is that Yelp is one of the very few apps that I don't have.
Oh, you should get that. Oh, it's a really useful app.
Good. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. Tonight and tomorrow night will be the last drawings for the 2013 Camaro. Players have been earning entries all month. If you're listening live, the next drawing will be in a half hour. Beginning June 1st at 3 a.m., players may begin earning Chevron gas cards at half price. Normally 8,334 points, $1 a point, earns you $25 in cash or free play at the South Point. For points earned and redeemed in June, instead of the $25, you get a $50 gas card for the same number of points. There's a limit of 10 cards, which may be redeemed during the month. Assuming you consider Chevron gas cards to be the same as cash, this is effectively double points all month long, at least for the first $83,000+ you put in, which for many players is more than they will play anyway. At the Palms, this weekend ends the May $125,000 money bags drawings. 10 winners are called Friday and Saturday night. Winners 1 through 5 get $500 and get to choose a bag after the Saturday night drawing. Winners 6 through 10 get $250 apiece and are done. During the Saturday night drawing, you can win up to $7,000 in cash. If you play this Friday night between 8 p.m. and midnight, you're earning 3 times drawing entries for the Saturday drawing. Beginning at 8 p.m. this Saturday, you may start earning entries for June's $127,000 Slots of Steel drawings and tournament. There will be winners every Friday and Saturday night in June, and all winners come back for the big finale slot tournament on June 30th, where you can win up to $52,000 in free slot play. In June, the play on Friday and Saturday nights from 8 p.m. to midnight earn you 5 times drawing entries, which effectively means if you're not there on Friday night or Saturday night, you're taking a big hit in the drawings. The PEW, Play, Earn, and Win, guests for the first half of the month have a theme of stainless, which is some pots and pans, silverware, stuff like that. And the guests the latter half of the month have a booze cruise. So I'll drink to that. Your points may be redeemed over multiple days in the same week. On Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays, starting June 1st, there will be a slot and video poker bingo game. They had this promotion a few months ago, and it proved popular. When you receive specific hands in video poker, such as a full house or royal flush, etc., a slot attendant marks off the square on your bingo card. The amounts you get depend on the denomination, and some games and or machines are excluded. I have not seen the cards yet for June. I have heard they are very similar to what they had in the earlier promotion, but I'll know better next week. At videopoker.com, the monthly contest through tomorrow will be 100 play draw poker with quick quads. As always in these contests, pick the game with the highest variance. New to the site, you can now play Hyper Poker, a game not yet found in casinos. In this game, dealt winning hands receive a random multiplier up to 12 times. This is similar to Super Times Pay, except you receive the multipliers only on hands where you already have a winner. Like many of their most popular games, you do not need to learn a new strategy to play this game. Gold members on the site can practice this game now for free. In addition to being able to play free games, the website offers a forum where members can exchange ideas. I participate on this forum more than I do on the one on VP Free. Colin, we have about 30 seconds left. Before the show, you talked about getting a guest for next week. Do you have a confirmation yet, or are we still a little bit up in the air?
You just asked Colin that question.
Colin.
I assume you asked me. You meant me.
I did.
I do not have a confirmation yet. So because of the World Series of Poker, people's schedules are a little bit crazy. So we're winging it, but I'll find somebody.
Yes, we have several backups in case. And in 2 weeks, we're going to have Man on discussing the difference between the M Life and the Total Rewards slot club system. Thank you, Colin. We are out of time. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.